from the front lines of the green rush. This is Green Entrepreneur, where business owners talk about how they found success in cannabis and how you can too.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Green Entrepreneur Podcast. I am the host and editor-in-chief of Green Entrepreneur and greenentrepreneur.com, Jonathan Small. And my guest today is Ross O'Brien, who is the author of the very brand new Entrepreneur Press book, Cannabis Capital, How to Get Your Business Funded in the Cannabis Economy. Ross is a real expert in this space. He is the founder and the CEO of Bonaventure Equity, which is a top cannabis venture firm. And he is also the founder of the Cannabis Dealmaker Summit, which I've been to a few times. And these events bring together thought leaders and cannabis deal makers and venture capitalists and entrepreneurs from all around the country to discuss the state of cannabis capital. So, Ross, welcome to the podcast.
Jonathan, thank you. Really great to be a part of this.
And thank you for writing your book. If anybody ever wanted to learn about cannabis capital, that is the Bible right there. You know, you are really on the ground floor there, and you give amazing advice from your experience in cannabis and just your experience overall in venture capital funding. So thanks for writing that book.
Well, I really appreciate it. I'm an avid listener of the podcast, delighted to be a part of this. And you're the first person to actually thank me for writing the book. So I really appreciate that. It was a massive endeavor that took on a life of its own, but could not be happier with it. And, you know, as we're talking right now, we're only a few days away from it actually being for sale.
Yes. And again, I encourage people to go out and get it. And we're going to just touch on some of the key points in the book in this podcast interview. I think first, just to set the context here a little bit, let's talk a little bit about your origin story, how you got into the business and into venture capital in general, and tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, sure. Thanks, Jonathan. So I had a very non-traditional career path that has sort of converged in a number of ways to where we are today. But prior to being focused in cannabis, I had set up my business to help support a group of investors that I had been working with over the years, referred to as family offices. I was actually a chief investment officer of one of these groups for a number of years and responsible for all their self-directed venture capital, private equity, and real estate. And prior to that, I was an entrepreneur going back to starting my first business when I was 19. So I had the combination of entrepreneurship, finance, deploying capital, and then set up my own shop to start to pursue a number of different opportunities. I had been looking at cannabis for a number of years, and we just couldn't get as comfortable with the entrepreneurs and the management teams, the opportunity set, and the regulatory overhang until the last couple of years. So our entire focus on cannabis took a real turn sort of mid-2017, late 2017. We started focusing on, you know, building a platform and didn't want to rush into the space to just start writing checks. So that's how we developed all of these different elements, which is the Cannabis Dealmaker Summits, as you had mentioned, the event series. We saw that as a great way to convene the best and brightest and get access to the other investors, our other partners, our co-investors. We like to, you know, co-invest with everybody who's writing checks and look at a lot of opportunities together, and also led to developing the book concept. And as I approached Entrepreneur Press about that in April of 2019, really took on a life of its own. And so we spent the better part of last year focusing on building the platform. And where we are today is we are about to close our first fund, and we will be working on fund two here very shortly. So we are a committed, dedicated venture capital fund looking for opportunities exclusively in cannabis. And we're very excited about where things are going directionally.
So tell me how this book came about and sort of what you learned as you were writing the book.
Well, thanks, Jonathan. So I started writing the book because I wanted to create a resource for, you know, myself 15 years ago when I was an aspiring entrepreneur trying to learn how to build a business. And as we started looking at a lot of investment opportunities and meeting a lot of entrepreneurs in cannabis, there seemed to me to be still a little bit of a disconnect in the conversation around, you know, finance and raising capital, and just some of the terminology and communication lacked a bit of fidelity. So I started writing it to be a resource, almost like a textbook, so that entrepreneurs and early stage companies could get access to some of the more sophisticated financial modeling and structural things as you go about raising capital. As I started getting into some of the research, we did some of our own proprietary research. We worked with some outside firms, and I interviewed, gosh, about almost 20 investors or 25 other investors. So we really got a good lay of the land. It occurred to me that one of the concepts that was getting in the way of some of the conversations was referring to cannabis as an industry. And so we don't actually think that cannabis is an industry. We think that cannabis is an economy. And as an economy, it's global in nature. And within an economy, there will be sectors and sub-industries within that. I mean, we think that there will be cannabis and cannabis-derived products in every home, period. So this became a much more of a macro view. And we realized, and this is why I've actually defined the cannabis economy for the first time in the book, we realized that by talking about this as an economy, it cleared the way for us to have some of the more direct and collaborative conversations with the companies that we're talking to. Now, within that, we also did realize that there are emerging industries that are new in their own right, and cannabis venture capital is one of them. But we really wanted to start with, okay, let's look at this as a global macro economy. Within that, let's look at where the emerging sectors are, and then we can start to talk about bringing the first principles and best practices of entrepreneurship, which are generic across any sector or industry, apply it to the nuances of cannabis, and now you're ready to go have the conversation about raising capital.
So what kind of companies do you invest in your first fund?
So Jonathan, I think it's easier to start a little bit about what we don't invest in, because we are opportunistic and look at everything across the global cannabis space. We have a mandate to create $1 billion in value and positively impact 1 billion lives, which means that we have to be international in scope and long-term in terms of our investment thesis. So we're not looking for any sort of quick IPOs. We're not interested in anything in the public markets. We are private company investors. So we look for exceptional management teams with really foundational businesses that we can get excited about, that have some traction, whereby we can put some rocket fuel in terms of capital, some operational support, advisory board, firepower into these companies and help accelerate them a lot faster. We really see one of the key missions in our objective to redefine the role of venture capital for cannabis. So as we were really getting acclimated with the space and working on the book and the events and putting our capital together, it occurred to us that, at least from our perspective and having done private company investing for about 15 years now, we didn't want to just try to adopt traditional venture and drop it into what's happening in cannabis. We saw a lot of people doing that, and a lot of them, as you know, are now no longer, you know, writing checks or haven't moved forward with any further funds or changing their strategies, et cetera. And the reason for this is that it seems that where cannabis is today is actually not the right fit for traditional venture. Traditional venture is designed to invest and finance disruption in mature markets, right? So this is not a mature market. What we're really looking at is less on the disruption scale, but more on what are the foundational businesses that are operationally sound, that are getting some traction, that can build some real long-term value.
Interesting. So if I were to approach you as my company, what would be some of the things that you would look for?
So we've found that there's a really interesting correlation between legacy cannabis experience married with business acumen and long-term sort of operational experience. And if that's out of balance, that's something that in either direction has appeared to be a little problematic to us and the companies that we've invested in versus what we've been looking at. So it's really about the team. It's about the business. We like companies that aren't just sort of band-aids for something that's just opportunistic for a moment in time. You know, there's a lot of companies that come to us that have an interesting solution for a problem today, but that problem doesn't map to a consistent problem, assuming there's, you know, federal legalization, for example, or as new states come on board, or as incumbents in other sectors start to enter the industry. So we really look for unique businesses that can carve out their right marketplace, but aren't just sort of temporary land grabs, or, and I don't mean that in just specifically like real estate, but the market land grabs, aren't just temporarily grabbing something and trying to capture some economics that aren't, that appear to not be there for the long term. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. I guess to turn the question around, when should a company seek venture capital investment money to flip the script here.
Yeah.
When do you think, especially, I mean, when we're talking specifically in the cannabis field, when should they make that decision? You know what? We're going to seek outside money.
I think that's such a great question. And it's something that is addressed, obviously, in a lot more depth in the book, in particular in the sections on the process and raising capital and the types of investors.
Right.
I think it's just critical for entrepreneurs to know who their investor audience is. And there's investors that invest at the ideation stage, at the very beginning, before there's any infrastructure, like angel investors and friends and family. And then there's late stage private equity and hedge funds that will only look at companies that have multiple year history of profits and growth. For us, we are looking to invest $1 to $5 million in any single round that we participate in. So the companies are going to have some inflection points and some growth already behind them. We're comfortable pre-revenue, although it's not exactly in our strike zone. We don't have a mandate to invest or not based on revenue. We want to see a line of sight to revenue. And we certainly look for companies that can benefit more from just capital, where there's real rocket fuel in terms of the resources that we can provide as well. Now, that's unique to us, and that's how we define venture. And that's our specific investment thesis. If you're, you know, for the entrepreneurs that are thinking about where to raise capital, I think it's very important to match up in your life cycle and the amount of capital that you're trying to raise versus what the sources of capital are that are available. And in cannabis, there's very few committed cannabis funds, structured funds that are focused on cannabis. There's a lot of family offices and private investors that are difficult to get access to. So I think a lot of it maps to, is it an idea and a PowerPoint presentation? Is it an established business? Have you developed traction at revenue? Do you have your team in place? Is there, you know, a line of sight to some real market expansion? Those types of inflection points all indicate to different sources of capital.
All right. So you have been in this field for a while. You watch the market very carefully. And I would love to get your predictions. We're just starting the new year here. New year, new mm-hmm. book, new outlook. I would love to, you know, get some of your predictions for 2020 because, you know, nobody knows anything. It's very, very hard to figure out where this is all going. The public market, as you know, has cratered. A lot of people there was an excitement, sort of a bubble has burst a bit in the field. And, you know, rather than thinking about this as doom and gloom, I think you have a much more sort of rosy, positive outlook on the business and the future of the business. So let me know some of your predictions for where this is going in 2020.
Sure. And I mean, nobody's really an expert yet, right? I mean, everything's still in flux and being figured out. So I can speak to...
You're a lot closer than most.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, I can speak to, you know, the things that we've seen and some of the predictions, but it's very much from our vantage point. We were right out of the gate for some time, very concerned about what was happening in the public markets. It just didn't seem rational for the valuations that were being awarded to these companies. And it certainly felt like a lot of companies were prematurely going into the public markets at a very early stage. So companies with $5 million in revenue and things like this. But there was the retail investor demand. So to us, that indicated that at the retail investor level, so people that are investing in public securities through their brokerage accounts and things, this is a good litmus test for sort of societal, you know, perspectives, right? And so we felt this was really showing us that the world is heading towards, you know, the acceptance of cannabis in all facets of life. Mm. And with that, but there's the disconnect between the excitement to capture economics in that with these public companies and Canadian exchanges and things like this versus, you know, the pathways to invest in businesses. I talk a lot internally about using the example of pets.com and the, you know, the dot-com bubble, right? Well, it's not that people didn't want to buy their pet supplies online. Right. It's the poster child for the market going sideways, but it was a company that was, you know, now that all the case studies are out and it's studied in business school, you know, it was not a well-run company and was burdened with toxic financing that went public prematurely. And then the market went away from them. Compare something like a Chewy's, it's a multi-billion dollar company today that sells pet supplies online. It meant that people believed it was there.
Yeah.
It's just the public markets going a different direction. So long way of saying we've been very bullish on the private company investment thesis, and that's why we started our fund structure. The public markets are collapsing, I would say, sooner than we anticipated, but it's not unanticipated.
Right. Everybody
that also
saw that
means
coming.
That, yeah, exactly. It's not, you know, so it's certainly we're not in a not running for the hills.
Yeah.
And in fact, we think we're about to enter into a period where investing in private companies is going to be potentially a generational opportunity, once in a lifetime opportunity, because we're just seeing really terrific companies and terrific management teams and really smart people coming from the existing cannabis advocacy arena and, you know, legacy cannabis people to, you know, people coming from other sectors and doing some really interesting things.
Are you able to talk specifically about some of the companies that you're excited about that are in your portfolio?
Yeah. So there's, you've actually interviewed some of, for example, LeafWorks, I think, was on
yep.
the podcast.
Yeah, they were great.
Developing the genome for the cannabis plant. Those types of businesses and there's a lot of stuff sort of in the pipeline that will be made available on the portfolio on our website in short order as well. But I think it's going to be a situation where those companies that are really resilient, that are really founded on just core entrepreneurial acumen of resourcefulness and perseverance are going to build the companies that are going to be around for the long term, because we happen to be in a great position because we have capital and we're, you know, looking to put it to work. Now, there aren't a lot of capital sources as there in cannabis, especially going into this year, even fewer than there were last year, but compared to more established industries, there's still we're still nowhere near the amount of capital that should be and could be deployed for the amount of entrepreneurship that's happening in this space. But just like 08, 09, that didn't deter great entrepreneurs.
Right.
You know? Just because
you just had
the markets were,
and pivot. Yeah. So two questions. One, I'm wondering where you see the opportunities if somebody were to be getting into the business in 2020, and also where you feel like maybe the market is a bit saturated. The Green Rush is alive and well, but not every avenue is created equal here. So where do you see the opportunities first? Like where are you seeing some opportunities in the space?
Well, so we have a really strong background in healthcare, and I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg in terms of all of the different pathways all the way through to FDA clinical trials at the very scientific level to nutraceuticals and over-the-counter applications of cannabis for inflammation and sleep.
Mm.
So I think that's an entire space that's just going to have multiple facets to it that we're very excited about. We like services businesses that have to solve unique problems to cannabis that incumbent companies and other sectors can't get into right now. So obviously we're looking a lot at banking and credit card processing and payments there and what's happening from a regulatory standpoint. To go back to the beginning of your question, advice to entrepreneurs that are thinking about moving forward, it's very important to have a handle on the regulatory situation in your specific state, but also be paying attention at a federal level.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Well, so in a lot of our background, my background's in healthcare, right? And we've worked a lot with companies that and work a lot with, you know, lobbyists and you know, government relations strategies that are an important tenet of the business development of the company. And if done right, authentically and in a, you know, legal, you know, way,
yeah,
a change in regulations can actually be a market maker as opposed to a market preventer, right? So, you know, there has to be regulation. And we think that's good. And we do think there needs to be more sophistication and more controls around the things that are coming to market, right? This is the same with every sector and every industry. So it should be no different in cannabis. It's just getting defined at the moment. So try to read the tea leaves in your region. Where are things going directionally? What is the sentiment and what opportunities that carve out? I would also say if you're otherwise looking at something that is really a job, I don't know that there's a lot of companies that have been started that sort of feel like that are going to make it, right? So a lot of craft cannabis and things like this, where I've met a lot of smart men and women that, you know, really know infinitely more than I'll never know about it. But it strikes me that those people aren't always the best fit to go raise $5 or $10 million and build a whole big infrastructure when they could be really practicing their craft within another infrastructure, another organization. So go get the experience, go get out there. Don't necessarily be in a rush to start your own business, but be out there driving forward and doing what you do well. And I would also say that there are competitive pressures coming that more quickly probably in this space than other sectors. So, you know, big tobacco and alcohol. I mean, they've been looking at this for a long time. So I don't think we're going to be in a situation where there can be a slow build out of, you know, a lot of companies that will be defensible for a long period of time. And I think we're seeing that with a lot of the acquisitions that have been happening, a lot of the M&A activity recently. But look, right. The good news is that as things are settling, it's becoming very clear what the different verticals are where people are growing. And I don't mean that in terms of actually growing the plant, but growing companies, right? Establishing companies.
Do you invest in, speaking of growing, do you invest in companies that are cultivating?
We do. We have an investment in a company in Massachusetts called Revolutionary Clinics that we're very, very excited about. Also a gentleman on your podcast, Ryan Hansen, I believe. You talked to him.
Fascinating guy.
Really exceptional team. Really excited about that. But we do have some, we definitely wanted to have investment in that arena. But I think going forward, as it becomes more and more of a commodity agriculture investment, there are other people that do that better than us. Mm-hmm. So I'm not suggesting that it's not a good investment thesis just for us. I think we can move the needle a lot more in companies in other verticals right now.
So you are very focused on the health sector. And I'm curious mm-hmm. about CBD because, as you know, the FDA recently came out with some warning letters to some companies. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody was expecting the FDA to actually be, you know, to give some more positive feedback on the industry. I think we're all waiting for the FDA to regulate CBD to some degree. But what's your prediction about the role of the government in cannabis regulation in 2020 and beyond?
Well, look, I actually think it's a good thing. And I think it's a good thing because there needs to be regulations. There are some wonderful companies out there that we've, you know, some investments that we've made that in CBD companies, but there are also some operators out there that are not, that aren't towing the line and putting out products that are not quality, that are potentially harmful. And you generally just need to control that. And once those rules become established and defined, then everybody has a level playing field. I think, you know, true competition can emerge at that point.
Right.
Look, the FDA has been overseeing, I think they're a critically important agency within our domestic economy. And we've been involved with them in a number of different verticals historically in the healthcare space that I've been involved in. And there's a lot of benefit from having a, you know, clear set of defined regulations and rules that are in both the public best interest, but it's also in the company's best interest too.
What about some of the other cannabinoids that people are, you know, you keep hearing about beyond CBD? Is that something that you guys look at?
Not particularly.
Okay. You don't get that granular in your...
No, I don't think it's something that's really on our radar right now because there are so many really exciting opportunities. We don't have to stretch too far beyond our comfort zone. Our comfort zone, Jonathan, is investing in great management teams with private companies that can, you know, really, really grow and scale effectively and build tremendous value. And
yeah,
going back to my comment about incumbent venture financing disruption, we don't necessarily have to stretch too far into the unknown. It's really about operations. It's about the blocking and tackling. It's about the team in place. It's about being properly financed, having the right relationships. It's not always the best product that wins. It's the best sold product that wins. It's being compliant and being ahead of and engaged with the regulatory and policymakers. Those things just become the right sort of mosaic of the companies that we think are going to win. So we tend to try to just stick to our knitting.
Yeah. And you had mentioned you really like to invest in great management teams. I'm mm-hmm. curious what that means to you. How do you define a great management team?
I think it's it usually comes to light when things aren't going well in the sense that right. It's collaborative. It's about alignment. the most important thing for us is not just the structure of a transaction and the investment, but really having a non-contractual discussion around, look, what are we trying to build here and what's the business plan? Because not every investor is the right investor for every company, and not every company for sure is going to receive investment. And in traditional venture, to use some data, because we don't really have data in cannabis yet, you know, it's less than one in 300 companies that ever secure funding. Now, that means that there are another 299 companies that think they're a great investment opportunity that no investors agree with, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a pretty massive right. disconnect. And in my experience, it tends to come down to, are we trying to build the same thing? Do we have the same objectives? Are we in alignment? And when things go sideways, are we going to be collaborative and be, you know, resourceful in solving problems? Because there always will be problems. So we always want to have an alignment of the business plan. So, for example, exit strategies, right? If a company is very eager to go public right now, for example, not just from the market standpoint, we were saying this before things really took a dive, that's just not for us. So all of a sudden, our investment thesis is out of alignment with how the management is building the company. It's not to say that they're wrong. That's just not a fit for us, right? And so when the business plan is aligned, when things do run into challenges and hurdles, because it will always take longer, it'll always cost more, the results will always be more challenging, and you know, managing people is extremely difficult in small organizations, and there will always be problems there. It's about having a collaborative team, an extension of the management team that can provide more than just capital. And we really try to live that when we work with our companies.
All right. Well, Ross, sage advice from the almost expert, Ross O'Brien. So Ross's new book, Cannabis Capital, How to Get Your Business Funded in the Cannabis Economy, will be available on January 21st. You can find it at entrepreneur.com, on Amazon, or any other place that you might purchase books. I highly recommend it. It is a deep dive, to say the least, into this mysterious world of cannabis capital. Ross, thank you so much for your time.
Jonathan, it's really my pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Green Entrepreneur Podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and other podcast hosting services. Check us out at greenentrepreneur.com. Download our app at Green Entrepreneur. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We are everywhere, and we would love to hear from you. So please give us a shout out. Love to hear from our audience. Until then, we'll THC you later.